Hello, everybody. Glad to be back. It's been a while. You know, I've still been thinking about January 6th and how awful it was that my friends and colleagues were there. And, you know, frankly, that we haven't seen the accountability that should have happened for so many people. The acquittal last week of Donald Trump was in the Senate was not surprising, but still just vastly disappointing. And I think we've proven now, or our system has proven, that impeachment is entirely partisan and is an insufficient process for holding people accountable. So that's something that we're going to have to reconcile. But we've also got these rogue members of Congress, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I think we haven't finished dealing with them either. She seemed to be empowered when she was removed from her committees, and rather than, you know, seeing it as a lesson to be learned and a reason to be quiet and stop with her crazy nonsense, she's doubled down. And I wanted to talk to my friend Jimmy Gomez, who introduced a resolution to actually expel Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, who obviously was there during the insurrection. And, you know, he can talk to us about a lot of things, but excited to have him on. So let's talk to Jimmy. Okay. So hello, Jimmy. Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to see you. A lot has happened since the last time we talked, including a massive attack on the Capitol, fomented by the occupant at the time of the White House. And that was, you know, you were there, so I want to hear about your experience during that. But you also, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was that you introduced a resolution to expel Marjorie Taylor Greene. And personally, I'm a huge supporter of that resolution and wanted to kind of have a conversation with you about that and about why just removing her from committees isn't enough and where you think we need to go from there. And then the third thing I was hoping we could touch on is, you know, just as Congress is moving into a place that can actually get stuff done, it's not going to be blocked by Mitch McConnell, including this first COVID relief package. Yeah. I mean, this first new COVID relief package. You know, you've got a role on Ways and Means, and I wanted you to maybe explain to people what that means and how the committee is going to be involved in, you know, in marking that up and everything like that. I lost my video for a second. I'm trying to, I have a new computer, so hold on. Where did it go? There we go. Okay, cool. So I think that covered it.
Okay.
Where do you want to start? Okay.
Well, no, first, let me say thank you for having me on. This is really cool that you have a podcast. You know, yeah, you were in Congress. You know what it's like to be there with other members. But this year definitely started off different. Even the swearing in, it wasn't the real hustle and bustle of every other swearing in where your family comes in and everybody's excited and everybody's on the floor at the same time. It started off chaotically different. You know, they were trying to swear in us a bit. Us in smaller groups, but that worked and sort of and didn't at the same time. So, but it was really exciting just to be there. And that was on a Sunday. That was January 3rd. And because it's always the same day. So mm-hmm. It was January 3rd. We got sworn in and we knew that it was going to be a kind of a hellish week, a tough week. My chief of staff tells me, she says, oh, this could be a hellish week. I said, try to stay positive. You know, yeah, we're going to have protesters. We're going to have people who are going to be attacking us, maybe even trying to throw shit at us and stuff like that. I said, but in the end, we're going to get through it. We'll be fine. And Joe Biden will be president. So I was trying to stay positive. And then the way it was supposed to work is because we are, as Democrats in the caucus, believe in setting a good example. We're trying to do social distancing. So only the people who had states that were going to be objected to were going to be on the floor. The rest of us, we're going to be up in the gallery and they're going to be circulating us out in groups of like 25. So I ran over there about right before 12:45. And I was, I ran to Zoe and she's one of the counters of the Electoral College votes. So I saw her and I knew I wasn't late. I'm like, oh, Zoe, I'm glad I'm not late. since you're still walking there. So I ended up getting there, did an Instagram live, told people how I was going to work, got in my area, and there wasn't that many members up there. I saw, I think, Corey Bush, and I saw a few other members, and then in the gallery. But I sat there, and as more members came, I kind of wanted to keep my distance from the rest of the members, because I didn't want too many of us in one spot because of COVID. So I moved around to where the press sits. You kind of seen it up in the gallery. Mm-hmm. It's on the same side as the rostrum, but like up front, and there's little stools. So I sat there and just kind of watched the proceedings, and we started going over Arizona. And that's when, after Steve Scalise spoke, I see him, all of a sudden these people come and take Pelosi and the leadership away, and they took him away right after he was done speaking. I was just like, this mother, yeah. And I was just like, and then you can hear the commotion, and I was getting text messages from friends, my staff, about what was going on. And I was just like, I was pissed off, because I was like, Steve Scalise is the guy who just spoke against the certification about the stolen election. And he gets whisked away to safety while the rest of us are stuck in the gallery. So I was really pissed off, and just watching everything and trying to just assess things and listen to orders. And I was sitting near Susan Wilde, and that's when they kind of really said, okay, they breached the Capitol.
You're stuck, right? Like, you're up there. Oh. There's nowhere you can go. Yeah.
No, they locked us in all at the top, and they locked in the doors. And Ruben Gallego was on the floor doing, being a Marine and telling people, okay, trying to explain to people about gas masks, right? Because they're saying, hey, put on, like, you have gas masks under your seat. So we all reached down to grab the gas masks, and he was explaining to people how to use them. A member, we never got training on that.
No, I'm like, I don't think they told us how to use the gas masks.
No, I didn't even know there was gas masks there.
I didn't know they were in the gallery. I mean, in anywhere in there. So I knew that we had them in our office.
Exactly. We knew we had them in the office, but they never did training. So I was just thinking, okay, we opened it's a black case with a zipper, and it has a plastic like tie around it that you have to snap, and then you have to open it. And I thought the gas mask was going to be right there. And it's like, yeah, it's right there, but in plastic wrapping. And then you take, and it's tight. It's like, it's not like loose plastic. It's kind of thick plastic, and you have to tear it open, and you rip it open. And then there's another layer of plastic.
Oh my God.
So it was three layers. I was like, oh Jesus. So
like, well, good thing that they hadn't gassed right then.
Exactly. So I started doing that, and I'm watching, and some gentleman who was, I don't know who he was, but he came in on the rostrum, kind of told people to, you know, about what was going on. People should stay calm. And then there's gas masks. And so people, you can feel the panic start setting into the room for all the members. And then they cleared, I saw Ruben Gallego, and Ruben, like, he was directing people, and he looks up at the gallery at me because we're roommates, and he's kind of trying to see if I'm okay. Yeah. He's like, do what I do, what I do. And I saw he wasn't wearing a jacket. So I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. We talked about it before.
Yeah.
Take off your jacket, get rid of the lapel pin.
Right.
And then I also went a step further. I took off my tie, put it in my pocket, just trying to walk around and say, okay, how the hell are we going to get out of here? And then they evacuated the people on the floor. The members on the floor were the first ones. And all the Republicans were down on the floor, because none of them were doing social distancing.
Yeah.
So it was just, that was real frustrating. And somebody up above in the gallery is like, what about us? What about us? And they're like
from the press, in the press, or for you guys as members?
Yeah, a member said that.
Okay.
And they said, oh, you got to run to the other opposite end of the gallery.
My God.
So, and the gallery, as you know, is divided. And it's actually steep, right? It's pretty steep. And it's divided into sections with handrails.
Right.
So these handrails.
Well, the handrails, like.
For me, the handrails were high enough where I couldn't jump over, and low enough where I was still uncomfortable to duck. So you're running up, and you're sliding through. You're reaching out with your left hand and sliding through with your right side. And we start running. All of us start running. Some members, I didn't know this until later, some members were migrating towards the door anyway. So some members got out, and the rest of us, we started running. And I started realizing when I was sitting there, I was like, oh shit, actually I did have this thought. It kind of cheered me up a little bit when I was up there. I was like, is this the end of our democracy? Right. That's kind of like something that was going through my head. And then I was just like, well, I got to get out, figure out. And I start running and I noticed that I'm kind of like pushing through people. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to be the person that was, I was thinking, do you want to be remembered as somebody who stood back and helped somebody or helped members get out, or just somebody that just ran? I said, no, I'm going to be the person that's remembered for helping members. And I was dragging this one woman. I had no idea who she was. She's a member. I think it was Kathy Manning. I was literally dragging her under each bar. And she's like, I'm okay, I'm okay. So, and as we're, I was thinking, hurry, hurry, hurry. And then we like, they shut down the door on the other side. So as you're like, so at far end, right? And it's a good distance to run. And you can see it as we're passing, as we're running over and we're seeing. So I was towards the very end and I saw they started barricading the door with the bench that's in the back, you know, the different benches that are in the back. They started putting stuff. And I didn't really see that their guns were drawn, because I was like, it was, you know, when you're right up against the door where the president comes through for a State of Union, you can't really, you have to like lean over in order to see it. So as we got to their side, they shut the doors, and then I'm just, and I remember hearing some of the cops going, who has the keys to let us out? Right. And some people want to go out one door, and everybody's like, no, don't open it. You don't know who's there.
Yeah.
So people were kind of fighting, and then all of a sudden they told us to start ducking, right? Because you heard the gunfire. And I can't remember where the gunfire was, but the guns were drawn. And I was looking for somewhere to like hide behind a wall. And there's not a lot of space up there. Like behind, like I looked up and I saw Darren Soto, and he's like peeking out from behind one of the rows. He's trying to make himself as small as possible. So I just kind of like made myself as small as possible, got down, and there was a staffer behind me. And people were like up, right? And they're like, members were taking videos as they do, and photos, whatever they're doing. And I'm yelling at people myself.
Get down.
We're yelling, get down. And as I got down, I realized, I thought, oh shit, my phone was buzzing off, like just buzzing text messages and phone calls. So I was like, oh, I got to let Mary know I'm okay. But I don't want to say like, oh, I love you or anything like that.
You didn't want to make it so that it was like saying goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. So I texted her, and it was at, I think it was like at 2:47, because I later looked on my, I took a screenshot of the text, and it just said like, you know, in the trying to get out of the Capitol with police. That was it. Like, I didn't want to say anything. And it felt like we were up there for a long time. And we had discussed, okay, well, something goes wrong, what do? Do you fight your way out? And you're just having all these thoughts in your head. But I was just like, oh, I'm just trying to survive. And I can't say that I thought, okay, at that, like your mind's running so quickly, you're trying to figure out how just to survive. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, we have the gallery cleared, because you heard people banging, you heard a shot, you heard flash bangs, and you heard the shot when Babbitt got shot. So we were just kind of, it was chaos. And they finally opened the doors, and we start going down outside, and we saw that the SWAT team had all these people on the ground, you know, on the backside of the gallery. And we can only see a few of them, because there was a few that were in the hallway towards us. And we just walked down some stairways I've never been down, and we get out. Yeah. And that's when I think the LA Times reporter, she asked me kind of like, she's, oh, sorry to do this. And that's when I think I realized, oh shit, this could have been the end. Right. And especially, my quote was something like, you know, I think Donald Trump should be brought up on something, on treason for something like this. Yeah. This is how a coup starts, and this is how democracy dies. And we got shuttled to the holding room, and there was all these Republicans. I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here. And Ruben, you know where your old office was, right next to Ruben's. That's where we went to get away from everybody. So no, it was a terrible experience. And it's always like right afterwards, you're like, your emotions are just kind of at the surface, like all the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like, I felt I knew it was impacting me. So I had to kind of take some time off. Like I stayed around to get, you know, certify the vote. I stayed till the very end at like 5 o'clock in the morning to make sure that I was there to follow it through. Cause I was like, I'm not going through this for nothing. Yeah, exactly. We're not gonna let these motherfuckers, you know, stop us. So, but it was a tough situation. It was bad.
Well, it was bad. I'm obviously really glad you're okay, but proud of you. And, Jesus, it's just, I hope Mary's okay too. I mean, that must've been, you know, scary.
You know, she was so busy with her work, and I texted her and she was so busy with her work. She, knew what, like something was going on, but she was running around dealing with COVID because she works for the mayor. And I guess it really didn't hit her until way late, like in the evening, until she saw
she must not have been watching the news as it was happening. Yeah. Probably
no,
very much no. For the best.
Yeah. So it hit her in the evening when she saw some of the news.
Yeah. So, oh my God. Well,
yeah.
Think. Okay. So then it came out that Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of the others had basically been providing information to some of these, insurgents or whatever. And, you know, I can't remember. It seemed like there was a series of things that precipitated your resolution. And I'm just wondering if you can kind of talk us through that. And, you know.
Yeah, members were talking about, like, did Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert give people tours? Was that something that, like, was there reconnaissance going on? Some members said that they saw them. I said, I didn't see anybody. I wasn't on, so I couldn't make that claim. And then Cori Bush she filed this resolution to investigate like 147 members to hold them accountable if they were involved for inciting this mob to overturn the election. And so I signed on, I became a co-sponsor of that. And I just was watching a lot of what was unfolding.
Yeah.
And Marjorie Taylor, it was just how they were acting every single week after the insurrection, how they acted in the room. And then more and more of the rhetoric came out regarding Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I always knew that the QAnon people were dangerous because it's something that I was paid attention to from my being on oversight, something that we actually voted on a resolution about, just a bunch. Like I thought it was really bad, but it, when I heard about kind of what she said about, executing Nancy Pelosi should be executed for treason, using political speech to try to overturn an election, and using political violence. Right. So it's sedition, it's political terrorism, and it's domestic violence, all of it kind of wrapped into one. And I was just like, okay, I'm done. Like, we should not have somebody like this in Congress, right? She got elected, but once you get elected, and even before you get elected, how you act can determine if you should be expelled from the House or not. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I was told from when I was running, and be careful what you do when you're running, right? Because that they can use that against you to expel you. Mm-hmm. Not that I did anything like she did, but it was always in the back of my mind. And then it reminded me of when Kevin McCarthy attacked me for delaying swearing was delayed. And he was calling on me to resign just because I hadn't been sworn in yet. So it's like, I just saw that it was just a double standard. And I thought she was dangerous. She was not only using, she was trying to incite people to overturn an election. She was going around the metal detectors that we set up because these members would not agree to not bring guns onto the House floor.
Unbelievable.
And as members, we have access to the House that we can bring in a gun to our office. There's members with guns in their office, right?
Yeah.
So it's that's why we're extremely concerned. I was like, okay, I'm done, and I want to introduce this a resolution to expel her. And we announced it. We started running with it, and I think it created, like, other members were working out censure resolutions, the resolution to letters and resolutions to kick her off the committee. But I think that the saying that no, she doesn't belong here, help kind of spur a lot of action from leadership and help create more momentum. And I think that removing her from committees is literally step one.
Yeah.
Censure is weak. I'll vote for it, but it's something even Pelosi said. It was like, you censure people for, you know, misusing stationery, right? Like, right. Just little, like, they censure people for all sorts of reasons. Expelling.
And it has no real consequences, right? Like, censure it's just like a slap exactly. on the wrist.
Exactly. And it's something that I think it's necessary to send a message to anybody who wants to run for office that you cannot incite political violence in order to determine the outcome of an election, mm-hmm. to overturn the outcome of an election, or to further a legislative agenda. That's just,
right.
We can't go down that road. And if we do go down that road, which some people have, then you end up undermining the democracy that you claim to love and want to protect.
Right.
So, and people always say, oh, it's a freedom of speech. It's like, you don't have a proverbial, like, right, just to yell fired in a crowded theater, right? That is not allowed. You're not allowed to incite an insurrection. That's against the law. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you can have as many crazy thoughts as possible, but once you start trying crazy ideas in order to incite somebody, in order to create political violence, in order to get your way, that's where the line we can't let them cross. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a tall threshold, right? 2/3 is super tough to overcome. But
as we've seen with the Senate and Donald Trump, right?
Like, oh, exactly. I mean, the Republicans are scared to do the right thing, right? Because of either their voters or Donald Trump or a person. I think Kevin McCarthy is attached at the hip to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think the QAnon caucus has replaced the Tea Party within the mm-hmm. Republican conference on influence, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is a real thing. And she's the face of it. She is the person. So it's, but this is, we have to kind of draw a line. I underestimated the power of the lie that they were spreading when it came to the election was stolen. I underestimated how many people believed it and the intensity of that belief. So I, after kind of living through it, I was like, we can't do that anymore. We can't give them a pass. Oh, they're a fringe element. Oh, they're crazy. Oh, no, we gotta push back with facts, push back with character, push back with determination and drive this, this faction of Republicanism or these folks in politics, drive them from the political arena, from civil discourse, and then hopefully bring other people who maybe like Trump, which is fine in the sense that they have every right to believe in what they want to believe, but bring them back to what is appropriate political discourse and act. You know, and actions within the confines of American democracy. So, this is personal, but it's also I do wholeheartedly believe that we got to send a loud message, and that's expelling Marjorie Taylor Greene for her actions and behavior.
Yeah. So there's a precedent, right, for expelling members, and that happened post Civil War.
Yeah.
Am I right? I'm sure you must have. Yeah. So what? And that was kind of a big consensus, was that if you're an insurrectionist or if you're a traitor, then you don't. I mean, we expelled like what 11 members back then, or something like that. Yeah. What did you find out?
Yeah. So that it's not done often. It's very difficult to do. Mm-hmm. It was done in the context of the Civil War, but. But people have been expelled when they got arrested, been convicted and arrested. So Traficant, for example, that happened to them. So it's difficult because you need both parties to agree to it. But it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done. I want.
Yeah. And that you shouldn't try, right?
Like exactly. And right now, and I, we're having discussions with leadership on kind of timing. I told them I'm committed to bringing them up, bringing this resolution. We have 70 co-sponsors. We have more co-sponsors on this than people who co-sponsored, removed her from committee or even signed up for the censure resolution. So, and that's before the impeachment managers. We're still going to reach out to impeachment managers and see which ones of them are going to jump on, because a few of them said that they're going to. So it's, it's hard. But I do think that we have to draw things he said. Everybody's like, oh, that's just Trump.
Yep.
But it can infect the minds of the public.
I agree.
When there's no proof on the other side combating it.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous. I mean, if the good thing is, one of the silver linings is that our institutions proved more resilient than people think, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine if we had a House of Representatives that wasn't controlled by Democrats.
I know. Like, would it have even, I don't know that the election would have been certified, honestly, which is a terrifying thing to think about.
But I said that we almost are a Republican form of government, right? It's a republic.
Yeah.
Almost bent, it almost broke, but it bent, but it didn't break. And, and that's because of a lot of institutions that were put in place. Even give credit to Mike Pence, where he just called the balls and strikes. He didn't muster the courage to invoke the 24th, 25th Amendment, right, to get rid of him.
Yeah.
But it was at least a step in the right direction. A record number of senators voted, Republican senators voted to convict him, which was, seven is, it sounds like it's a little, but it's still a lot compared to whoever's voted in the past. So this could be a fight. So I'm trying to figure out a path forward on the resolution. My goal is love to get rid of her. She would, I think with time, she's going to give us more and more examples of why she should be removed. And then I want the American public to know what side are they on. Are they on the side that respects, our constitution, our rule of law, understands that when you lose, you walk away in a fair way, or you're going to follow the people that believe in conspiracy theories and division and hatred. And that's what I think Marjorie Taylor Greene and the Republican Party are going down. So I want to vote on it so that people can see where their member of Congress landed on this issue.
Yep. 100%. Yeah, completely. And was it not a single Republican voted to strip her from her committees, or were there a few? There was a handful, right?
Yeah, it was a handful. I think 11 people voted to strip her from the committees.
Go ahead.
Oh,
I was just going to say, and I would imagine that, the more time that passes, especially now that she's got all this free time on her hands, that she's not going to be doing any committee work. Like, she's just going to, that she's going to not be able to keep her mouth shut and do stupid things.
Yeah. And that's what I was, the next day I was talking to Jared Soto, and I was like, I think she's going to not change. This is not like, just like Trump didn't change. Yep. Just, she's not going to change. And I was talking to somebody else, and I said it's like the tortoise and the scorpion, that story about the tortoise and the scorpion. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, and I told them about how the scorpion asked the tortoise to give him a ride across the flooded river because he couldn't get to the other side, and the not the tortoise, it was the frog. It could have been tortoise or frog, doesn't matter.
Reptile thing.
Yeah, yeah, that was able to get him over. And they basically said, no, I'm not going to do it, because if I take you over on my back, you're going to sting me. And the scorpion said, oh, I'm not going to sting you. He's like, why would I do that? If I stung you, then I would drown myself. And it's like, okay. And he's like, okay, get on my back. I'm going to start going across the river. And all of a sudden, the tortoise for the story feels a sting, and then he goes, and they start sinking. He's like, and then he asked the scorpion, why did you sting me? And he said, it's because, and the scorpion replied, because it's in my nature. Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it is in her nature.
Mm-hmm. Can't help herself.
She's not doing this because she doesn't believe in QAnon. Mm-hmm. Right. She says she doesn't believe in it, but that's BS. If you look at her, her tweets.
Oh yeah. She believes it. I mean, messaging, she's a freaking champion of it. Like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. The same messaging is there. So like, you're asking her to change her nature. She's not going to do that.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I think that she needs to be removed, and she'll give us plenty of evidence of why she should be removed.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. Well, I know that I don't want to keep you too long, but I do want to, before we, you know, move on completely, just, are there specific people that you want to get on as sponsors? Is there any specific kind of action that you're kind of, you know, that listeners could be supportive of if you're trying to move this forward, et cetera?
Yeah, we're going to, I think just getting members from across the board to get on. I would love to have a Republican, because that would send a real like strong message. But remember that these are her followers, are some of them are dangerous because they're true believers in her mm-hmm. cause. And a lot of the folks that stormed the Capitol wearing their QAnon t-shirts and their hats and their flags totally believe it.
Yeah.
And when they were going to try to execute Nancy Pelosi, they were also chanting "Hang Mike Pence." Mm-hmm. Right. So Republicans are in a vulnerable position just as much as Democrats, maybe even more so because of the districts that they represent. So love to get a Republican on board. And that would be, I think, a huge message for that more people can get on board. But it's a slow process. Having 70 co-sponsors is a good amount. But yeah, and if somebody in leadership signed on, it would send an even stronger message that this is the direction we're moving in. But I'm committed to introducing it. We're going to end up doing that. I'm just trying to decide the timing.
Yeah.
And then hopefully that the leadership decides when there's going to be a vote. I think it's just going to, this whole issue is going to flare up once again.
I agree. I think it's just wait for her to dig her own grave, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. So, we got to push forward on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in other news, tell us about your work on Ways and Means and what your other committees, that what your guys are doing with the COVID relief bill, with the budget reconciliation, and like what is going on?
So budget reconciliation, it's interesting. Everybody thinks it's a congressional process. It is, but it really starts in the Senate. If they're not doing it, because it's about getting 50% plus one, or 50 votes right. plus one to pass a bill instead of the 60 votes to stop debate. So it really starts with them, but it's a negotiation between the Democratic leadership and the Democratic leadership in the House and in the Senate. And then they came up with a number, the 1.9, decided which section gets what. And now it goes to each committee, and they're given a budget. So Ways and Means got more than half of the budget. We got 9.4, something like that. I forget what it was. Billions of dollars for our different programs. So ours included the $1,400 stimulus checks, unemployment. What else? The earned income child tax credit.
That's what I was going to say. The child tax credit was something that Richie Neal, I know, was talking about. Right.
So the child tax credit is each kid, I forget what the number is, gets a certain per kid, you usually get it, and you apply, and they increased it, and you apply for your taxes, and it's called a refundable tax credit, where you get, if you fulfill, okay, you have four kids, you get $350 a piece, you get whatever that is, right? Mm-hmm. And you get it back into as a tax refund. But the main problem with those kind of refundable tax credits, everybody has to wait a whole year. Yeah. It's not like they can use it throughout the year in order to help them, you know, buy groceries, pay the rent, right? So the way Richard Neal did it is said that people are going to get an advance on that tax credit, and they will get the amount directly to their either by check or through direct deposit.
Wow.
For each family. And then when they file, that's when the kind of gets, it should balance out, but that's when they settle up. But that is a huge deal, because if you can do it for the child tax credit, why can't you do it for the earned income tax credit? Why can't you do it for these other programs that require?
Well, why couldn't you do it for the relief things that are right now being based off of income that's irrelevant during the pandemic? But if you did it as in advance to anybody, then if you're not eligible for it, you end up just having to pay for it in your taxes next year, right?
Like, yeah. And here's the thing: it's the stimulus checks are a refundable tax credit.
Right. Most they're basically the exact same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and what happened was, in order to get out checks quickly, they use the previous amounts. But once people file their taxes this year and say that like their income dropped from 2019 to, 2020 below the threshold, they're going to get the checks that they were owed. Right. So, and that's the thing. The child tax credit, I think that is a big deal on its own, because it's going to bring it's going to reduce child poverty by half.
Wow.
And here's the thing. It creates a formula that can be replicated into other programs.
Totally.
When a lot of times people focus on just one program, one check, but what happens if you actually change the formula that you get that check every single month, or who it goes to? All of a sudden, it's a different ball game, because nobody can ever use the excuse, well, it's never been done before, we don't know how it'll work, it's going to cost too much. No, we did it.
So
that is a big deal. But
that's definitely happening, right?
Yeah, that's definitely happening.
That's awesome.
So I'm still trying to figure out, though, it's still all based on people filing their taxes. Lower income people don't always file their taxes, don't always need to file their taxes, just because sometimes their income drops so low, right? That they don't need to by law to file their taxes, because they don't owe anything.
Right.
However, if we can figure out a way to get, the lower income individuals to file their taxes or to enroll in these programs, then all of a sudden you're going to have people like, you're going to have a huge impact. Anything that has numerous steps to do, people more higher percentage just don't do it.
To the whole IRS free file thing that I don't know if you remember, but that was a thing that I got super involved in, which is basically that there was a bill, it was one of the last big ones that John Lewis did. And there was a line in it that would have made it so that there could never be a system in which the IRS basically generates pre-populated tax returns for people and files, basically sends it and says, well, if you have nothing else, then this is based on the income that was reported and here you go. Right now we've got this free file system with TurboTax and all these other ones, but the research shows that those are totally, those are, for lack of a better word, they're for-profit businesses that are trying to make a profit, and that ends up being made on lower income people. So anyway, I guess that is just a bug in your ear to maybe figure out how to do the free file.
No. Good point. There are examples. There's other countries that file people's taxes for them, right? They do it.
And it's not like you don't have a choice if you,
yeah.
Of course you can do it on your own, but this is just for, if you have a simple return, if you don't have a lot of income, it should just be automatic.
Yeah. So it's an interesting idea that I was just talking to my chief of staff about. So it's, we got to figure that out. How do you reduce the obstacle? So, but Ways and Means is interesting. There's a lot of talk about an equity agenda within Ways and Means, within Congress in general. But when I got to Congress in 2017, I told somebody I wanted to work on equity, and they're like in a business? I'm like, no, as in like the people most in need get the most help, right? The people disproportionately impacted by, illness, housing, lack of housing, whatever, poverty, they deserve the most help, and you have to target those resources. But nobody talked about it when I was there. All of a sudden, it's the hot word of the day. So, yeah. But talking about it and doing it, two very different things. Mm-hmm. Talking about it, I think people think that it's that they're being woke, and that's how they like they're being relating to the working class. But if you're not willing to take steps to change policy that directs more money, even at the expense of, you know, more higher income levels, mm-hmm. if you're not willing to do that, then it's all talk, right?
Yep. There's no redirecting resources when you're not willing to take some away.
Yeah. Here's my whole thing was always like, what it does, it gives people, if people see less people in poverty, less people on the streets, more people getting by instead of just like, not only getting by, but doing well, mm-hmm. then people are going to say, you know what? Government actually works. Right. The programs work. Yeah. As long as people see things that are like distressing, where you have just, you know, a growing homeless population, more kids in poverty than ever before, then that faith that government can work is just going to be completely eroded. And they're going to just say, you know what? Forget it. Let's not, don't raise taxes. Don't implement new mm-hmm. programs. Don't do this. But if you continue doing it the same old way, where in the old structure, then you're going to end up with the same kind of results, yeah. which is not very good. So big issue.
Yeah. Well, and that's the whole Republican playbook, is to basically defund government, minimize people's trust in government, and then, do everything.
You're absolutely correct.
To get rid of it. So,
and hopefully people saw what Trump did. When you have a lack of leadership and professionals in government, you end up with the shit show that we had for the last 4 years.
I know. I think I keep seeing these articles that are like, well, you know, the pressure's on Biden because such and such COVID deaths have happened since he was sworn in. And I'm like, he's been in for less than a month. And there was, I think, Stephen Miller, one of the Twitter guys, did this whole blast on how people need to be holding Biden accountable for this. And it's like, are you shitting me? Like, how is this? But I do think that there's going to be enough of a groundswell of people seeing like, wait a second, things are just more normal now. Like, shit's actually happening. That even, those swing voters, the ones that aren't like diehard Trump people, are going to be like, it is nicer with somebody who's not a child in the White House. Not a psychotic child, not even the right word, but like a complete
Chucky.
Psycho. Yeah.
like Chucky.
Yeah. Anything on oversight that you want to tell us about?
Oversight's going to be interesting. We've actually, the money for local government funding that came through oversight, but the Republicans are like, they're grasping at straws. They're saying California is getting all this money, but they have a reserve, right? A surplus. And it's like, and then on the other hand, they're saying, so they shouldn't get money. And then on the other side, LA is doing a terrible job. Why should we be helping them? Because they're not being responsible. And it's like, wait a second, are we doing a terrible job, or too good of a job? Or basically, you just say we shouldn't be helping local government. So that's going to be that was a fight that we're going to win, but it's something that we're going to contend with these Republicans. And there's some doozies. I mean, they didn't even hold back. They went out the whole anti-immigrant kick right off the bat.
Oh, of course they did, especially for places like California.
They didn't even hold back. Like, usually you'd see them kind of hang back a little bit. I'm the vice chair again.
Oh, good. So, congrats.
Thank you. I was allowed to serve another term because I didn't, I only served a partial term. So we're going to have an agenda of kind of looking at a lot of different companies. I want to continue doing stuff on facial recognition, which is a little tougher. I asked for with Jamie Raskin for the investigation of those, what they call these cliques in the sheriff's department. And kind of how they operate. So we're asking for that. So we have our hands full and oversight, but right now it's a lot of passing policy. We want to, the census is still out there. It's still a train wreck. We're not going to get the numbers until September.
And then the redistrict has to happen. So people are going to be like, we're not even going to know, what districts people are running for until, like the end of the year.
December. The postal service, like this guy has to get the hell out, you know, DeJoy, this the logistics expert who
fucked wrecked. Everything like, over. Yeah.
So I mailed a letter to Priority Mail to the East Coast.
I can't tell you how many things that have gotten totally screwed over because they went through USPS. And I'm normally such a huge, I am a huge fan of the post office, but he really did like try to ruin everything. I don't know why he's still there now. Anyway,
he should resign. I know. That's what I was wondering, why he's still there. So we got to get rid of him.
Yeah. For those who don't know, oversight oversees the post office. So that's a beast to tackle at some point.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thanks for talking to us. Anything else that you think we should know, et cetera?
I think that it's going to be an interesting Kevin McCarthy is going to be he's going to try to keep his caucus together, you know, when it comes to just a variety of things. But I think that he's so beholden to that super right fringe of the QAnon caucus, right? The folks that you know are don't even believe like even the Tea Party Freedom Caucus is that that hardcore. I think that's gonna be a major storyline and a major issue moving forward. You know, I'm gonna try to keep getting rid of Marjorie Taylor Greene, but
maybe add Lauren Boebert to that list eventually.
maybe, but Lauren, my whole thing was trying to stay focused. A lot of times we go too broad, too big. Yeah. Lauren Boebert will have her own, probably Reza, what she should be removed, but staying focused is key. But yeah, I think this could be a big, big issue moving into next year and the 2020 election. So watch out. I know.
Well, and you could see it from just how Kevin went and groveled at Trump right away. I mean, he's still... Trump is still the figurehead within their party. And as the majority leader, you know, he's in a, the party is totally doesn't know what the fuck it's doing without Trump. Right. And it didn't know what it was doing with Trump. So it will be, I think a major hurdle for it means to me that it is certainly not a foregone conclusion that 2022 is going to be a loss for Dems. And I think it means that we have to play that much harder to keep our seats, but win a bunch of them back too.
Yeah, I agree with you. We got to be smart about it. So,
yeah.
But all right, Katie, thank you so
much. Yeah, tell Mary I said hi.
I will.
And hopefully I'll see you here in DC soon.
Soon enough. I'll talk to you.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye. Bye-bye. That was great. It's always so good to talk to Jimmy, AKA Congressman Gomez. It's really nice to hear that we're at a place where we can finally make progress and stop just kind of futilely fighting against terrible things. And I'm honored to know him, proud to have him as one of our leaders in that fight. So exciting to see where things go from here. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk soon.